Welcome to episode 247, where later on we'll talk about famous musicians' homes. And, you know, as I was about to do the story, I saw One Country post a whole story about Taylor Swift's multiple million-dollar homes, where they kind of walk through all of her houses that she has right now, which is pretty crazy. I think it's $30 million in total.
Ooh.
So that's what Eddie and I talk about in a little bit. So you want to hang out for that. But the whole site is called onecountry.com. And they say, does she live in New York or Los Angeles, Nashville or Rhode Island? But the answer is all of them. And they go through her Nashville place. When she first started to make money, she bought a $2 million Nashville place where she knocked out the wall. And I know where this place is. It's right next to Music Row. Do you know where Taylor lives?
I don't, no.
Well, I don't know if she's there that much, but do you know where Taylor owns?
No.
I should say. Right near the radio station. In Rhode Island, she has a 12,000-square-foot beach mansion. She paid $17.75 million for it. It's where she has all her summer parties.
That's the one like someone broke into, wasn't it?
Is it?
I think so.
Well, it looks like a fortress, but there is a lot of grass surrounding it, so you could get to it. Mm. Like in New York, she bought these two apartments and knocked a wall out, and then bought a third and knocked another wall out. So they have that. They have a $25 million. Well, I guess it's more than $30 million. Because in 2015, she purchased the estate of movie mogul Samuel Goldwyn for $25 million. So that gives her two homes in Nashville, one's her parents, an awesome apartment in New York, a beach house in Rhode Island, and a mansion in California. Yeah, that's way more than $30 million.
That's a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah, good for her. So we talk about a lot of people that are dead and alive in their homes and what's being done with it, et cetera. So glad you guys are checking it out. You know, on Fridays, if we put one up, we often highlight a lot of the music that came out today. Kane Brown shared a new song called Worldwide Beautiful. Here's a clip of that. You're missing every color if you're only seeing black and white. Tell me how you're gonna change your mind if your heart's unmovable. We ain't that different from each other, from one to another. And when I looked, that was the number one song in all formats this morning. I wanted to come on and see where it was before we landed. We'll go through some of the other new stuff. Brantley Gilbert has a new song out called Hard Days. Check it out. If you never had hard days, if you never had a heartbreak, never had more than you can take or carried away, life on your shoulders, would you feel like you? Tyler Farr released Only Truck in Town. It's a four-song EP, so we haven't heard from Tyler Farr in a little bit. We'll try to get him on an episode of next week's Bobbycast, but here is a song called Heaven on Dirt. You got me flying on a cloud right now. The way you look in that rear view, you sure making me want to. Pull it over, maybe show it on down. Let's wild go crazy. Slide them over here, baby. Take our time, let the night get to work. Let's see. Carly Pearce has a cover of Cowboy Take Me Away. I'm assuming this is Dixie Chicks?
Yep.
Okay, here you go. Cowboy take me away. Fly this girl as high as she can into the wild blue. And set me free, oh, I pray. Kanan Smith has a new song out called Colder Than You. So here's some Kanan Smith. Kind of has that Blue Ain't Your Color feel. Gone West released an acoustic version of What Could Have Been. Cause we left blood on the tracks, laid on the saddle. Fire in the hills, a bullet in the barrel. Words never said in a story that didn't end. Looks like you're on the mend and I'm on the bottle. Folded our hands with money on the table. Tried moving on, but I keep coming back again. To a could have been. Hey, so tell me about Run the Jewels.
So they're a hip-hop duo, and they put out their album early this week.
Why?
Just because with everything going on in the world, they felt it was kind of about that, so they put it out early.
But it says 2 days early. Albums come out on Friday.
Yeah, it came out Wednesday.
Oh, so it's been out a couple of days.
Yeah, a couple
okay.
days.
That's why I was confused. Okay, Run the Jewels released their album a couple days ago, and this is called Just,
mm-hmm.
with the money sign as the S.
Yes.
With Pharrell and Zach De La Roca from Rage Against the Machine. Here you go.
Let it sink in. 2020, on the map. Wrong one cut in my hourglass. Don't watch it spill to the bottom half. You see the piece, now running fast. On the tarmac, get a starter jack.
Is that Zach De La Roca there?
Yeah, that's him.
He sounds good.
Yeah, that's what I was surprised by. I was like, damn, I never really heard him like just kind of rap.
And Zach De La Roca is probably, is he 50 now?
Oh, I gotta see.
Like, as far as socially conscious music goes, Rage Against the Machine was a standard.
He's 50 years old, yeah.
And sounds contemporary.
Yeah, that's what I was surprised by. I was like, whoa, that's him?
When I was a teenager, we would listen to Rage, and, you know, they were singing about a lot of stuff that I had no idea about at the time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of social injustice, that was their platform, for in a lot of different areas. But, I mean, the perfect group to bring in now that was saying the same stuff back then, mm-hmm. right? But to hear him just in that song as a 50-year-old.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
Hit that again.
Let it sink in. 2020, on the map. Wrong one cut in my hourglass. Don't watch it spill to the bottom half. You see the piece, now running fast. On the tarmac, get a starter jack. C4 when I run it back like a track star.
That's crazy. Yeah. By the way, if you don't know Rage, if you're a little too young for Rage, they were formed in 1991. We may pull up a few Rage songs.
Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine is an American rock band from Los Angeles, formed in 1991. Zach De La Roca. You may also know Tom Morello, who was in Rage, who also does a lot of other music now, a lot of social commentary as well. Their songs express revolutionary political views. They are in rap metal, rap funk, funk metal, alternative metal, new metal, hard rock, if you were to, you know, wonder, like, what do they consider themselves? But all the alternative stations played them like crazy. And it was, like, hard-sounding guitars with kind of hip-hop-style lyrics. So here's a little Rage, as we used to call him. So this is really hard sounding sonically with the guitar.
Yeah.
But then when he starts, it's not screamo. It's not even really singing. It's kind of a hip hop. I saw, I think, maybe a TikTok or an Instagram where they were playing old Rage stuff to new young people saying, hey, this is new music. And they were like, man, it's really good.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. And they were doing it with a few different people, but the one that people didn't think sucked was Rage Against the Machine.
That's funny.
Like, they're playing for a bunch of kids. They're like, I can get down with this. This is pretty cool. Here we go. Yeah, this is just me as a teenager thinking I knew what was up. Yeah, maybe you can go back and listen to some classic rock rap, Rage Against the Machine today. But yeah, they were all anti-authoritarian. You know, they were considered revolutionary back then, still now. Almost all the band's songs were focused on some sort of social justice. So, you know, highly critical of a lot of what the United States was doing as far as foreign policies back then, and the government a bunch. A lot of protests. They would show up at protests and play and not let anyone know and just set up a stage. And it was like, holy crap, Rage Against the Machine performed at the protest. Some of their videos, if I'm remembering, were protest type videos in front of, you know, government buildings where they would have to shoot it quickly. Like, I think they were 10, 15 years ahead of their time, maybe 20. And to kind of hear him in that song, it's pretty cool.
It's cool, man.
Yeah. All right. Check out Rage Against the Machine today if you'd like. Anything else I need to say, Mike, before we get in what's going on? We got a conversation with Jillian Jacqueline.
Yeah.
And then we have Eddie and I talking about artists and their homes.
Yep.
Some still living in them and how ridiculous they are. And I say that in a complimentary way. Listen, I'm jealous that I don't have Kanye and Kim's house. That would be pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. And if
cool
someone
house.
Said you can have it right now, I would take it. and be like, wow, this is amazing.
I take just the closet.
Yeah. So, yeah, but they are ridiculous for sure. Here you go. Check it out. Thanks for hanging out with us. And I hope you like the podcast. Give it a few stars. Give it 5 stars if you don't mind. Check out Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. It's all about movies. And not just movies that are coming out. Like, fun facts. History in movies, right?
Yeah, the one I'm working on right now is if singers really sang in the movies they were in.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's what I'm researching right now.
Did Ryan... Let me think of which one it is. Hold on.
Okay, Ryan Reynolds. I got it.
The other one, Ryan Gosling. Did he sing in the dance movie?
La La Land?
La La Land. It's taking me a second to get there.
Yeah, they both did.
He did?
They both did, yeah.
I know he wasn't the best dancer, because he trained with Sharna, my dance partner.
Oh, for that, really?
She trained both of them for a bunch of that movie.
Wow.
Because they did a bunch of different styles.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some styles that she is specifically wonderful at teaching. And so she teached both of them. And she was like, because she would talk to me about it. She was like, listen, he wasn't very good either. And, you know, we got him to a point where she was, I think, pretty good. But I don't think he was good when they first started.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so check it out. Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. All you have to do is search Movie Mike wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, that's the deal. Enjoy the podcast. Thanks, guys.
Jillian.
Hi.
What's happening?
Oh, lots of stuff. How are you?
Probably about like you, you know, trying to figure it all out.
Trying. Yeah, there's so much. There's so much to read and learn right now. Yeah.
Well, it's good to talk to you again. I think it's been a little bit since we've talked. I was listening to your new song. Obviously, I'm in the fan club. I think I was one of the first members of the Jillian Jacqueline fan club.
You really were. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And so I just kind of wanted to get on, talk about this song for a little bit, catch up with you. And I think it's interesting when someone puts out a song and then the times kind of build itself around the song, right? Does that make sense?
Very much. Yeah. I feel that way about this song for sure. We wrote it like in the beginning of May, and we were writing it in response to COVID-19 and the pandemic, and how, you know, 3 months in, we were starting to feel like just the uncertainty was kind of growing, and everyone was just feeling like, how do we go forward and what is life going to look like? And then, of course, this past week, all of this happened with George Floyd, and I had put the song out on Friday, and as the song kind of came out in the world, this all started kind of happening, and I feel like it's one of those instances where the song and the message of the song is going to kind of take on a bigger life, and I think when we wrote it, we had this hope that it would feel like a very timeless, lasting message, wherever you are, whoever you are, whatever you're going through. And, you know, when we get down to the bottom of all of this division that we feel, the truth is that most people, when you talk to them, they just want to, like, be kind and love their neighbor and find unity whatever way that they can. So I really do hope that that's what this song's message is and what people hear when they listen to it.
I'm going to play a little bit of it right now. Here is Wait for the Light by Jillian Jacqueline. Let's all sit in peace for a second and hear the song. Here we go.
Get through a long night. If you feel lost on your own street, come and find me and we can wait for the light. Life is but a blink. A million stories unfolding.
Hey, tell me about when you guys hopped into the room to write this song. Like, you guys, who? It's you, your brother, and... Oh, sorry, you, Topher, and your husband, who's Topher's brother. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
You know about it. So Topher's my producer, and I'm married to his brother. So we're all kind of working together on my record right now, and we just decided to, because my record kind of got put on hold with the pandemic stuff, we thought, well, why don't we just try to write something new and see what comes out. And we sat around their grandmother's piano in my living room, and we just tried to be as simple and basic as we possibly could about what is true about humanity, what is really there when you take the politics and the issues and everything away. Like, what is it that makes us special and unique? And I think it's our resiliency. Like, despite all odds, I feel like humans always find a way to rise up again and to find the good, even when there's like overwhelming amounts of bad. So that was my hope with this song. And I think waiting for the light right now for me just means that we don't have answers. You know, we don't know how to fix things quickly overnight. As we know with this, everything that's going on right now, it takes time to make real change and to change people's hearts and minds. And so, you know, it's not always about just like, you know, flipping a switch and things getting better. Sometimes you just have to know that you have to wait with people through the darkness and be there for them and remind them that it's going to get better, even when you don't know how or when. So that was my hope with the lyrics of the song.
So you're not planning to put this on the upcoming album, is that right?
I'm not planning to put it on the upcoming album. I kind of just wanted it to be a standalone song. I think that it'll just kind of be its own thing.
If someone said, hey, 15 seconds, tell me what this song means to you right now with everything happening, what would you say?
I would say there is so much beauty even when there is so much pain. And I think it's our jobs as humans to continue to look in each other's eyes and find the good and find the innocence and find the peace.
What I'm going to use that for is for the radio show, because I'm going to play this on the air tomorrow. And, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, I've also added it to the count. Hey, Mike, didn't we put her as the feature artist? Does she know this yet?
She doesn't know it.
Oh, she doesn't know it? So we did the national countdown. You're going to be the spotlight artist of the week. We've also, our program, The Women's Show, you're going to be in that show, and then we're going to play this on the radio show tomorrow.
Are you serious?
Well, that's not a joke. What kind of terrible joke would that be? That would be the worst joke if I was like, just kidding.
Just kidding.
Of course I'm serious. You know, I am your biggest fan, and I love what you stand for as a person. Not even just in this situation. Obviously in this situation, but I think I sent you a grill for your wedding. That's how important your message is to me.
Oh, it's a really nice grill, too.
Yeah.
Wow, the best grill ever.
I got online and picked it out myself. Wow. But that's my point. Is like, I really like appreciate you as an artist and aside from you as a person.
Thank you so much. Honestly, it means so much. I'm like going to cry. Thank you.
Let me ask you, because you've been married for a year now, since we brought up the wedding. You just celebrated your anniversary in April. How's that year of matrimony been?
It's been a great first year. As you know, there's been a lot of crazy stuff happening. So I think we both have a really great sense of humor that this is quite possibly the hardest first year of marriage that ever existed. Living through a pandemic was interesting. But you know, I wouldn't want to be doing this with anyone else. He's my guitar player on the road. So, we make a lot of music at home in the studio, and it's kind of been our way of getting through all this. So, so far for year one, marriage is good. We'll see how year two goes. I'm hoping it gets a little bit easier in the world in general.
Were you guys living together before you got married?
Yes.
Okay. Here's my question. I'm living with my girlfriend now. Hit me with some advice, because I'd never lived with a girlfriend before.
Okay.
So, go ahead and lay me out a few tips.
Well, I would just say, learn when to leave the house. Learn when that person just needs some space, and learn when you need some space. I'm sure you guys are still in that honeymoon phase where, like, you just literally want to be together 24/7. So much fun. But I will say that is one thing in the first year of marriage. We love hanging out together, but we've been together a lot. And so I've gotten used to kind of just knowing, okay, I think now is my time to, like, run to the grocery store or just, like, give this person 15 or 20 minutes of just, like, alone time. So that is my number one tip right now.
Did you think I was going to be judgmental of you when I asked that question? Because you answered with a yes, like a yes?
That was like for all of those parents that just, you know, want their kids to wait. I was like, just letting you guys know, yes, we did move in together. But actually, I feel like it's really important. I think that knowing those weird little quirks about somebody, like if they leave the cap off of the toothpaste when they brush their teeth, and if it's going to drive you crazy, stuff like that, I think is important to learn before you get married, which I'm sure you guys are learning about each other right now.
Well, we learned a lot about each other because we were quarantined, kind of accidentally. You know, she came with a small suitcase, and she was going to be here for a week, and then that turned into 3 months, and I'm so grateful that it did. But you learn a lot about someone whenever you're together and can't leave the house. We didn't leave the house.
Yeah, wow, okay. So that was not planned, but luckily you're incredibly compatible, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm very grateful that we were stuck together. Obviously, I'm not grateful for Corona, but I'm very grateful for when that happened, that some wonderful things happened in my life because of it.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. I think it was meant to be. I think God had a plan.
You know, I'll take it. I will. I'll take it. Hey, let me ask you this. Do you still plan post-corona to go to thrift stores?
100%. Mm. Yes. I plan to go everywhere after corona.
But I wonder, because thrift stores have been touched so much, it's got people germs all over everything. Will that affect your thrift store shopping at all?
Never. No. I love used clothes too much. I love things that have a story to tell, so I will definitely be going back to thrift stores.
I saw you and Michelle Branch follow each other on Instagram. Do you know her?
I love Michelle Branch. I'm a huge fan. We did a festival in South Dakota together a few years ago, and we got to hang out. And now we're mostly just social media friends, but I hope at some point I can see her in person again. Yes,
she
awesome.
Yeah, she lives in town.
She does, yeah.
Hmm. What a collab that would be. Because I love Michelle Branch, too. What a collab. Maybe I should get on that. If
what
I started,
I love that you're putting that out into the universe. Yeah. I hope she hears this.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I have a little bit of pressure. I can. I have a big voice, you know. I'll just throw it out there. But I would love that. Okay, listen. You're here with us now. You can follow Jillian at Jillian Jacqueline on Instagram. She has a new song, Wait for the Light, which is fantastic. Just telling the story about it. It's not going to be on the new record, which I actually think is better, because that means the new record will have more songs on it, of new stuff.
More songs, yes.
What's the deal with the record? When's it coming out now?
Well, we're trying to figure that out. Plans got rearranged when the pandemic happened, but most of the record is pretty much done, and so I think I'm just going to try to play it by ear in this new climate and see what we can do, because I really do want to just start releasing music, and I'm so excited for people to hear these songs. There's a lot of love on these songs because I wrote many of them about my husband, so yeah, I'm excited.
Do you feel weird to play songs you wrote about him to him the first time?
No, I'm a Pisces. I'm just a very emotional, like, hard on my sleeve kind of person, so that's my favorite thing. I'm like, hey, I wrote a song about you today. Do you want to hear it? And then I like cry as we're listening to it, because I'm just that person.
And how does he react?
He loves it. I mean, it's very flattering, I think. To like, I always say he's like my muse, because I feel like I just am always inspired to write songs about what it feels like when you find the one.
Interesting. You know what I like about your husband? Favorite thing about you, because I've, you know, we spent a little time together out on the road. We toured together for a while. My favorite thing about him is that he plays a guitar left-handed, just like me.
That's right. You guys are lefties.
Because
it's hard for you guys.
Yeah, and I like him a lot. I like Brian a lot. But I nowhere I go do they have a left-handed guitar ever in my life. If I go to a place and everybody's passing around a guitar playing fun songs, I just have to sit there. But with Brian around, I could always just be, hey, let me see that, man.
That's very true. You guys have to hang and play some left-handed guitars together sometime.
That's why we get together. Hey, man, it's me, Bobby. You want to play some lefty sometime? Want to hit it? Hey, listen, Jillian, I love everything about you. I love your music, you as a person. I'm just the biggest fan separately of both of them. I'm very thankful that you exist and you do wear your heart on your sleeve and in your voice and in your music. So I'll encourage people to stream Wait for the Light. If you still download songs, download it. She is just a good old pure soul. Anything else you'd like to say, Jillian?
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you so much. This means a lot. It was so good to talk to you again. And I just really appreciate you wanting people to hear this message of the song. So thank you.
All right. There she is, Jillian Jacqueline. Bye, Jillian. Talk to you soon.
Bye. Talk to you soon. Bye.
So I have this whole thing pulled up about celebrity, musician, artist houses. I'd never been to Graceland, and that's kind of where this started. You have.
Dude, you would love it.
I know. And it's reopened again with Corona, because I could easily drive over there.
3 hours away.
And we drove. Easy. We drove to there. We were going, Caitlin and I went to Arkansas. We drove right by there, but it wasn't open yet. And so I started thinking about all these famous places that artists have lived. So I have a list of them, but we'll start with Graceland. Graceland.
Yeah, how do you say that? Graceland?
Graceland.
Graceland.
Right?
That's how I've always said it.
So Elvis Presley's iconic mansion is second only to the White House as the most visited home in America.
Wow.
It's an emblem to the king's celebrity. What's this place like inside?
Okay, so the first initial reaction when you walk up, you're like, this place is not big at all. Like, the house itself is not very big. It's not. I think maybe at that time in the 70s or whatever, it was huge. But it's not that big. And inside, they kept it exactly how Elvis had it, which is like shaggy carpet. The kitchen, you know, you would look at it and be like, oh my gosh, this looks like a house straight from the 70s because that's what it is. But it's cool, man.
What about the jungle room?
It's small. I'm telling you, dude, every room that you maybe even Googled and seen pictures of, it's tiny. The jungle room is small, maybe three pieces of furniture in there, but it is very shagged out.
So it says Graceland is 17,000 square feet, has 23 rooms, including 8 bedrooms and bathrooms. How is that small?
Because you can't go upstairs. You can't. I mean, you walk in, and then there's I think what makes it bigger than it looks is there's a basement or like a lower level that you can see. But overall, did you see, you think Elvis, the king of rock and roll, he would have a huge, huge house. It's not that big.
But again, there are all these rooms you can't go to that he got to live in.
Upstairs.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So yeah. It's still big then. 17,000 square feet?
Maybe,
23 rooms?
Maybe they're talking about the racket court and everything on the side too. But my recollection of it was like, wow, this is a lot smaller than I thought.
And I would like it.
You would love it. Because not only is it the house, every room too has a little story to it. You know, like you go into like the living area and the stairs are right there.
He had a whole chocolate pie over here, babe.
They would say stuff like that. Like Priscilla, you know, there would be like a voice of Priscilla playing and saying, I just remember, you know, like we'd had friends come in town and I would tell them like, hey, Elvis, the friends are downstairs. Time to come down now. And he'd want to be upstairs and not hang out with anyone. But then you would slowly hear the jewels start rattling. And here he comes slowly down the stairs with all his jewels.
George Strait's San Antonio estate is for sale right now for $8.9 million. The 8,000 square foot custom adobe mansion is on a hilltop, sits on 12 acres of land. After some price adjustments, you can now get it for right below $9 million. A guest house, an infinity pool spa, sauna, 14 hand sculpted fireplaces, custom stained glass windows. Not surprisingly, it took 2 years to construct.
It's funny, you know, when you live in a town where a celebrity lives in, everyone knows where that house is, apparently. But, like, I don't know where that is. But my parents would always just say, because my parents live in San Antonio, and they're always like, oh, yeah, George Strait's house is right up there.
But was it?
I don't know. I never knew where it was.
When I grew up in Arkansas, everyone said, Tom Petty's got a house, Hot Springs Village. I don't even think he ever did.
That's funny. The people love to make crap up like that. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, the house is right down that road.
Johnny Cash's childhood home. You ever been there?
No.
The Dias Colony in Arkansas was a 1930s New Deal initiative to help poor families after the Great Depression. So his family was some of the ones who benefited from that. And you can go. It's small. It's one-story farmstead, but that's – I have a lot of friends in Arkansas. They don't go because it's a tourist thing to do.
Yeah.
But they're like, you know, Johnny Cash is when they first moved, because they were in Southeast Arkansas, I believe, and then moved to where they are now. But it's just go see it. It's like Thomas Jefferson's place in Philadelphia. It's tiny.
Yeah.
It's like Thomas Jefferson lived here and it's like one room.
Now I've been to the Nashville Johnny and June house, which is not really there anymore. It's still.
It was for sale recently again.
Was it really? Like,
yeah.
Like how recent? Like a year?
Maybe.
Okay. So when I went, it's in Hendersonville, which is probably about 45 minutes from here or 30 minutes from here. And I guess what happened was after Johnny died and June died, is it Gibbs? Who's the BG guy?
Barry Gibb.
Barry Gibb bought it. And then while he owned it, there was some electrical problem or whatever in the house, and the house burned to the ground. And it never got fixed. They left it. like that. So you can go drive by today and the house is still there, but I mean, it's burnt and you just,
really?
Half walls are up. There's maybe a swimming pool, a slide by the swimming pool left.
Hey, Mike, will you see what's up with that Johnny Cash house?
I know Johnny Cat, Knoxville owned it at one point.
Interesting.
He sold it after that. I remember that.
Is it still up for sale? I feel like someone that I was talking to was just looking at it or just bought it.
Really? It's crazy, dude. The access you have to it, it's not like Graceland. In Graceland, the house is far from the road. You can see it, but it's far. This house, you can literally drive right next to it, and there's Johnny's house.
Oh, you can drive right up?
Right by the lake.
I was with a driver, because when I do some of these TV shows, I think the CMA Awards last November, a driver picked me up. And so because they want to make sure, it's not as much fancy as it is, they need to make sure you're going to get there on time. Mm-hmm. So they will send a driver to get you.
Oh, gotcha.
To make sure you're in the right spot, because you have a time, you have to be on stage. And if you're not there, they're screwed. Mm-hmm. And so the driver picked me up and he goes, "Hey man, I listen to the show a lot." He goes, "Man, this is crazy." He said, he's talking about where I live now. And he goes, "You know, Minnie Pearl used to live right over here." And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "And you know what? I used to drive the tours and we would go to all these celebrities' houses." He goes, "Nowadays we could never get away with that because people don't want you driving by and showing people where their houses because they get robbed."
Yeah, I know. It's different back then. I think in that country music documentary, they were talking about Pierce Webb.
And pool.
And how he had his guitar-shaped pool and he would have buses go by and he would sell jars of the pool water for $1 to all the tourists. You can't do that today. Can you imagine if Keith Urban did that?
Hey, Mike. Mike, what'd you find about Johnny Cash House?
It looks like it burned down in 2007, not all the way, and then it was for sale last year.
Okay.
Okay, so someone
how much
it.
Was it for sale for?
$4 million.
Wow. I thought I saw it up for sale. And did someone buy it?
I don't see that anyone bought it. It's still listed.
Wow. You want to go halves?
No.
No, not really.
I mean, is part of the appeal of that house there was Johnny Cash's for the $4 million, or you actually get a pretty good spot out there?
100% that it's Johnny's house. Because right across the street is, you know, old Farmer Bill with his tractor still in the front and a car on bricks.
Really?
Yeah, it's not.
But for $4 million?
It's not a great neighborhood, man. It's crazy. There's even like maybe a little cemetery next to it. You know, it's not. It's just a road with six or seven houses on it, and it's just by the lake. It is waterfront. It's about it.
Number 56 Hope Road. Does that address say anything to you?
Is it Bill Clinton?
No, Bob Marley.
Nice.
Number 56 Hope Road was bought by reggae superstar Bob Marley in 1975, as well as housing the Tuff Gong Studios. The 19th century colonial property in Kingston was the site of the attempt on Marley's life in 1976.
Wow.
It's now Bob Marley Museum.
Wow, that's
so
cool.
So you can go up to that home where he used to live and check it out. They don't act like it's super fancy or anything.
Yeah, well, the area is not very fancy. Even Kingston, Jamaica is very...
That's what that is?
Still dangerous.
Have you been to Jamaica?
No, never. Oh. But I read a lot about it.
Tom Petty's mansion was just purchased by Selena Gomez. What if it's one in Hot Springs Village? No.
Was not.
Now Selena lives in Hot Springs Village.
Selena Gomez has purchased the Encino, California mansion previously owned by Tom Petty. The home was sold last month for $4.9 million.
Wow.
At the time of the sale, the buyer's identity remained a mystery. Now it appears that Selena Gomez is going to be moving in. Mm. The spacious three-story home features 6 bedrooms, 8 full bathrooms, 2.5 baths. Its many highlights include a recording studio, stone fireplace, yoga studio, spiral staircase, game room, wine cellar, gym, massage room. Outdoor amenities include a cabana. How you say it? Cabana?
Yeah, cabana.
Outdoor bar, a fire pit, multiple decks, pool spa, cascading waterfall.
God.
Tom Petty had the house custom built after an arsonist destroyed his previous home at the exact same site. Wow. This song, I Won't Back Down, is about the person burning that first house down.
Really?
The traumatic experience would inspire his 1989 hit, I Won't Back Down. The iconic singer lived in his first home with his wife, Jane, until their divorce. He then moved. They rebuilt on the same property. Crazy. I didn't know that about that song. You can burn my house down. Selena will buy it, and we won't back down.
Does he say something about burning? No, he doesn't.
Are you looking up the lyrics?
Yeah, I was. I thought I remembered that, but no.
Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love's former home on sale for $7.5 million.
Is this where he...
I think so, and I think that would be like a really historic site.
Yes.
The former Seattle home of Kurt and Courtney have been put up for sale by the most recent owners for $7.5 million. Quote, a perfectly maintained home of extraordinary presence situated upon a beautiful park-like lot in the heart of Denny Blaine. Built in 1902, you can see exterior shots of the house. The interior shots are not made available. 4 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms, a wine cellar. They lived there only briefly after purchasing it in early 94. In the same year, he died by suicide in the greenhouse. Love had the greenhouse demolished before selling the home in 1997.
Okay. So that site's not there.
I was watching Man on the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And Courtney Love is in Man on the Moon.
So does a great job in that movie.
So Courtney Love, and so that movie's about Andy Kaufman, but Courtney Love plays Andy Kaufman's wife. But Courtney Love was lead singer Hole, who was married to Kurt Cobain when he killed himself. So we're connecting all these dots back. But Caitlin was like, I don't know who Courtney Love is. She's 28. And I was like, well, she was married to Kurt Cobain. She was like, huh? I was like, Nirvana. But Caitlin was born in 93.
Wow. When did he die? 94?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's crazy.
So when I was, you know.
Huge part of our life.
I'm 12 years older than her. But, I mean, I was about to be a teenager when this crap happened.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was right at a teenager. But for her, she was like, I don't even know who Courtney Love is.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, and if you think about it, I guess after his death, she did do a few things. But, I mean, she wasn't that famous where people would just remember.
She was the most famous for being Kurt Cobain's wife.
Correct.
But she was also in
Hole.
Hole, yeah. But I'm saying she also was in the movie about the guy who did Hustler, Larry Flint, The People vs. Larry Flint.
Oh,
she was great in that. Woody Harrelson played Larry Flint. Did you ever watch that?
Mm-mm.
Great movie, and she was great in it.
Is that People vs. Larry Flint?
Yeah, okay. Whatever it is. That's a really good movie. Jay-Z and Beyonce, they have a house that's worth $88 million.
They still live there?
With an original asking price of $135 million, Jay-Z and Beyonce got this two-acre Bel Air compound for a deal, $88 million. The property is six separate structures, including a 30,000-square-foot main house, a gaming entertainment building, a 15-car garage. That 15-car garage is crazy.
I think the four-car garages are nuts. Can you imagine 15 cars?
15 cars. Oh, Michael Jordan's house. Is it up here? It's not on this. They can't sell it. He's trying to sell it. And the price has been all kind. I think now it's at $23
million. Oh, gosh.
And it was way, way, way more expensive than that. Who knows? They may have dropped it. It was at $23 million for a while. He's 23. But he has like...
Oh, was that coincidence or...?
I think they marked on purpose.
They're like, and great, and we'll make a lot of money from it too.
Mike, what are you seeing about Michael Jordan's house?
I see $14.9 million.
So they've dropped it since then.
They're like, guys, the 23 is not going to work. I know it's nice and clever, but...
But he has it. Can you see how many garages? Because I remember hearing that car garage, and I was like, who would have that many cars?
Well, it's 56,000 square feet.
And how many car garages?
Let me see.
Well, in the documentary, I don't think you see him driving the same car twice. You know, in the recent Michael Jordan documentary, they show him driving a lot. And it's from like...
I wouldn't want to have to choose all the time.
Yeah. I feel like he liked choosing.
It's like Netflix. There are a ton of good shows on, but I'll just go scroll through all the fronts and never look at anything because there's so many options.
So if you can buy any car, do you think these people, like, you know, obviously they have the real nice ones, but do you think they ever want to just get a regular one just to feel regular sometimes? Like, I'm going to go with a Toyota Camry today.
No.
Just never?
Mm-mm.
Just to feel regular.
Probably not. Probably spent enough time in like a Toyota Camry.
Okay. Their whole life.
What do you see, Mike?
It has 9 bedrooms, 15 full baths, and a 14 car garage.
So 14.
Gosh.
And that's not, and you need to park some in the driveway too.
Yeah, I'm sure not all of them fit in the garage.
This Jay-Z and Beyonce house for $88 million has a smart house. It has a helipad, bulletproof windows, in-house spa, fitness center, a custom staircase,
oh my God.
40 feet ceilings, and sliding glass walls that can completely recede to open the interior up to a huge patio and lawn.
I want to hate on these people having these houses, but God, how awesome would it be to have a house like that?
Yeah.
I feel like that's exactly what I would want. What I've always thought too, like if I could have any house, I would like to put a par-3 golf hole in it.
A hole?
Yeah, just in the backyard, like a nice hole, and just play golf out there. That same hole every day. And maybe even at night, put some lights on it, have a light coming out of the hole so my friends can come over and we can play like competition hole in one.
That green would be so expensive.
Just the
if
green.
If you were maintaining the green. Having worked on a golf course for a while, that's really expensive. Kanye West to Kim Kardashian. They reportedly purchased this house for $20 million, but now it's worth $60 million. The three-story, five-bedroom house covers 5,000 square feet. They worked at it's all fancy, but they have a $60 million house.
Hey Bones, would you rather have these houses remain private, like especially some of these the dead celebrities like Tom Petty and Johnny Cash, Elvis, all that, or would you rather have them all turn into like museums so we can all see it? Or is it cool to just know the kind of house they had, but then somebody can buy it?
I'm a big free market guy, big capitalist. don't care. Don't have a problem with it either way.
Yeah.
I think it's cool to see it. And if someone wants to preserve it and can make some money, you know, if someone wants to buy, let's say, God forbid, Kim and Kanye died in a plane crash.
Right.
And they're like, we're going to keep it just as it is. We're going to buy it as it is. And we're going to charge people to come look at it. Think you can make some money off of it? Great. You want to change it yourself? I don't really have a preference. I don't think we owe the artist to keep their house the way it was.
Yeah.
What is your preference?
I do like the museum, obviously, for selfish reasons. We can see it. But
again, that's for money. Like, they're not building a museum for charity.
Correct. But at the same time, if money wasn't an issue and I had all the money in the world, I would love to buy their house.
Would you gut it and do a new one or just live in it like they did?
I would keep it the exact way they kept it. Like, a while back, somebody came in the studio. I think it was Thompson Square. And they were talking about doing a music video in Patsy Cline's house. You remember this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they were saying that
there's definitely history and a cool feeling about that.
It's cool because they left the house exactly how Patsy left it. And that's cool.
Well, it's also cool to go play the Ryman because
they've left it the way.
Well, you're just on a stage that a lot of folks have been on. Yeah. That you're like, wow, there's been some really great people standing in the same spot that I've stood.
Yeah, but if you look at pictures of the Johnny playing the Ryman or any of these old country legends, it looks the exact same. They have that picture of their backs, you know, and you get to see the audience. It's the same as if we went over there today, and they kept it the same. If it looked completely different, I don't think we'd feel the same way.
Probably a little bit though, because you're like, well, we're in the same spot on Earth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
my foot's touching where his foot touched.
Just like, you know, on the Earth, this building stood here. We're in the same spot that they played. You just the air, the aura. You know, the Grand Ole Opry. It's a different building. They built, you know, Opryland out in the 70s.
Yeah.
But they cut that square out. And it's the same square that the artist stands on.
Circle.
Sorry, circle. I'm not talking about circle. I'm only there every week.
Right, right. Yeah, and you're probably standing on the circle.
Yeah. Square. The Ryman stage feels like a square.
Yeah. But I remember talking to Wade Boggs. Remember when we met Wade Boggs, played that thing? And I was telling him about the Opry Circle. And it's a funny story. He said, man, that's exactly what I wanted them to do at Yankee Stadium with the old home plate. It's like, why can't we take a piece of that dirt where that home plate is and then move it to the new stadium? And he said eventually they did.
Yeah, they've done that in a few places too.
Is that so nerdy of us that we want to stand in that same place?
Baseball is a very traditionalist sport. I think maybe, Mike, you may fact check this. In Cleveland or maybe St. Louis, they did home plate in the same place and they just moved it because they had to rebuild the stadium.
Yeah.
They just rebuilt the stadium in a different direction.
That is very cool to me that you want to keep it the same. Just a little piece of it. Keep it the same.
Yeah, I apologize for calling the Opry a square. I'm an idiot. I'm tired. Idiot.
You are tired. It's okay, man. It's okay. I wouldn't have let you keep going with that.
I'm ashamed of myself. Mike, what do you see? Do you see anything about that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I probably made it up. All right.
I did see that Johnny Cash's house was bought.
Really?
For $3.2 million.
Dang. Sorry, Bones.
Say by who?
Some local hedge fund owner and his wife.
Oh. Eddie, tell everybody about the podcast you're on.
Sore Losers Podcast. It's a guy's guy podcast. Definitely have the guy's guy dude on it. Raymundo, Lunchbox, and me. We talk mostly sports, but we're just, you know, three friends, and we do have live really different lives. So it's fun to kind of have us all together and tell our stories and talk about what we do every day.
All right, there you go. Thank you, guys. Check out Sore Losers. Thanks for hanging with us here. Are we ending the podcast here, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right. There you go. That's a wrap. Goodbye.